comes back? What if there's no way of moving back? What when your face falls apart? Have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual. And we don't just discuss it, we go into the field to investigate. I'm Vance Pollock, joined in the studio by investigator Shelley Wright. How are you, Shelley?
Great. How are you?
Doing great. Sam, the animal steel producing. How are you, Sammy?
I'm all right. I know it's been a few weeks, but you're nervous?
You're
nervous?
Tongue-tied already?
Yeah.
Tongue-tied cowboy. Tick 'em up. Very special guest. Not going to dance around this with introductions, because to many listeners of Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange, she needs no introduction. Phyllis Galdi of Fate Magazine in person. How are you, Phyllis?
Hello, everybody. I'm doing great.
It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to get you down here to Asheville. That is still the long-term goal, to get you permanently established, and Fate Magazine with its Dateline Asheville, North Carolina, that is on the horizon. But first time you've had feet on the ground here in quite some time, right, Phyllis?
That is correct. Yes, it's been many years since I was at the Grove Inn with Joshua P. Warren.
Joshua P. Warren brought Phyllis to the Grove Park Inn when he was doing one of his big affairs, one of the early ones. I think Josh was just a lad, just a young
whippersnapper.
Whippersnapper at the time, and that was shortly on the tails of some of his Pink Lady research. Are you familiar with the Pink Lady story?
Oh, yeah.
Grove Park Inn, Shelley?
Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful story.
Ever spoken to anyone who experienced things or have seen the Pink Lady at the Grove Park Inn? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had a listener of the show come in just a couple of months ago, and he was saying that he worked at the Grove Park Inn for years, and so did his wife and his brother, and that his brother has experiences with the Pink Lady all the time, that he will just see her in different places and just start talking to her. And this is somebody that seems very rational and has been there forever. And, I mean, you know from the stories that the Pink Lady is very cordial. She'll talk to you and joke around with you, from what I've heard, when she runs into you. And there was a friend of Joshua's that I believe had an experience with her.
Well, Josh devoted an entire chapter in Haunted Asheville to the Pink Lady, and over the years, of course, since he's sort of connected himself with that story, people will come to him when they've got a story to tell about it. And I think that's one of the neat things about publishing a collection of local ghost stories. Then suddenly everybody knows that you're the go-to guy. If anybody's got a local ghost story, they come to Josh with that one. And the Pink Lady, I think the popular version of the legend is that she was pushed or jumped from the balcony over the Palm Court. And there's a particular room that is associated with the Pink Lady. And people who stay in this room, Phyllis, very often experience strange things, brushes being moved around, things not left where you put them.
How long ago did she live?
There is no substantiation, no paper trail. So there is the theory that perhaps she was a lady of the evening who was working at the Grove Park Inn, and this was all kept under wraps, and that perhaps she was pushed by a former lover or
disgruntled
something.
Lover.
Yeah, pushed over the rail.
It says in the 20s.
In the 20s.
That's so vague.
The heyday, anyway, before the Depression, anyway. Yeah, Grove Park Inn opened in 1912, I believe, and for those first, 15 years, it was grand. In 1929, kind of put a damper on a lot of the grandeur and the big, the spending, the jazz age, the excesses of the 1920s came to a roaring halt with the stock market crash in 1929, and we were years coming out of that one. But anyway, the Grove Park Inn, you spoke at that get-together, didn't you, Phyllis?
Yes, I did, many years ago, but it was fun.
Yeah, that's fun. Well, welcome back to Asheville, and we'll try and make it as painless as possible. But I told you that I was going to abduct you this evening. I knew you were going to be in town just a couple of days, taking care of business, as it were. And I said, well, I've got a plan. I'm going to abduct you. Do you tell someone? Is that
not
proper
really
form to tell someone you're going to be abducted?
Well, at least if I have memory, if I don't have any missing time, that's cool.
Yeah, I think the memories of things that happen here on Speaking of Strange remain pretty clear, but I have experienced missing time, like sometimes looking at the clock and it's midnight, and where does the time go? You folks listening to Speaking of Strange may experience missing time if we're doing our job here. Other times we may stretch time for you. It may feel, what is a three-hour show may actually feel like 8 hours of your life dying slowly away. You are listening to Joshua P. Warren, Speaking of Strange, on 570 WWNC, wonderful Western North Carolina, the talk of the mountains, and around the globe on speakingofstrange.com. Phyllis, tell folks what you will about the plan to establish Fate Magazine. If people aren't familiar with Fate Magazine, just briefly and bluntly, it's the premier publication, true reports of the strange and unknown since 1948.
You got it. Yep. Well, the plan is to move Fate Magazine from Minnesota to North Carolina, and hopefully we'll be very close to Asheville. It's kind of like I've been guided and led to bring Fate here for its next incarnation.
That's amazing. And you kind of spoke of yourself as the custodian of Fate Magazine, maybe not the custodian. What was the word that you used? The person who is in charge, the trustee.
I empty the waste baskets. Let's put it that way. Yeah, I do what I'm told to do, and this, I guess, was kind of suggested to me that this is the best place for Fate to flourish for its next 50 years.
A lot of people who remember the heyday of Fate Magazine remember the little digest, basically the Reader's Digest of the paranormal. During the 60s and 70s, what was the peak subscription or circulation of Fate Magazine in the hundreds of thousands of issues?
Something like 100,000 subscribers.
Copies.
It was the only game in town back then.
Very neat. And like I say, every grocery store checkout, every newsstand had Fate Magazine and the glamorous covers. And you continue that tradition of having fantastic artwork. The issue currently out, 731, with a cover story on ayahuasca. I love the very colorful graphic you've got there on that one. You sent this one to me a couple months back before it went to the printer. And I was excited about it. A great story. The lead article written by Michael Peter Langevin, who I interviewed on Fate Radio a couple months ago. Interesting guy. Very interesting guy.
Been there, done that. He's done the ayahuasca several times, so I felt he was the right person to tell about it from an experiencer.
Right. And experiences with the Amazon shamans. Michael Peter Langevin writing in Fate Magazine number 731, fatemag.com, the website, and people can still go there to subscribe or order individual issues, e-issues, back issues, merchandise.
Email us and we'll send you a free sample issue. No problem.
That sounds great. That's a great offer to listeners of Speaking of Strange in celebration of Fate Magazine's relocation to Asheville. You heard it. Phyllis Galdi says, email Fate Magazine from FateMag.com. Tell them you heard it on Speaking of Strange right here out of Asheville, North Carolina, and she'll hook you up with a free issue. That is hard to top. They're great. And even my little one, the last issue he picked up and was reading on his own. He's 7 years old, and I came home one day, and I'd left an issue of Fate Magazine laying around, and all of a sudden he wanted to have this conversation with me about black-eyed children. And I was like, where did you hear, what have you been watching on YouTube? And then he pointed at the coffee table, and there was a copy of Fate. And it reminded me very much of myself, because I have these almost misty memories. They're clouded by the mists of time from as early as I can remember Fate Magazine. I may pick up a copy of the new Spider-Man comic book or Fantastic Four or whatever one week, and the next week at the grocery store I would be as likely to pick up a copy of Fate Magazine. Apparently my mother didn't have any problem with that. Some parents were very protective.
Hey, Fate has ruined a lot of young minds. But it's all wholesome. A lot of school libraries even carry Fate, because it's where kids can go to find some real information, and it's objective and not scary, not too frightening.
Right. I think the nice thing about Fate Magazine is it brings a sense of community to believers, people who are sharing their personal experiences. I mean, it's not a lot of sort of flash and arrogant, you know, the
armchair
right
experts.
It's just these people from around the world, some of them very well respected in the field, some of them just regular folks with stories to share, and you can't deny the authenticity, or at least the sincerity, of most of what goes into Fate Magazine. There have been some times, like you say, that it was rather sensational. It used the exploitation of the day of some scantily clad women on those early covers.
Oh, the 50s, they all had naked covers.
I was just looking at the, there's a thing on Boing Boing, it's like a list of the best Fate Magazine covers from the 50s, and it had, like, they're all frameable, you know, like really cool looking UFOs and all sorts of, like, pop images.
We have them all available too for poster size images.
Oh yeah,
every single old Fate has been scanned and digitalized, so they're all available for beautiful posters.
It's true. FateMag.com. Go to the store and you can order poster size reprints of any of the magazine covers. Phyllis Galdi of Fate Magazine, our guest this hour on Joshua P. Warren. Speaking of Strange, stay put. It's going to be a wild one.
Fields and roadside crosses, billboards that remind us Jesus saves. Led you to a hotel room in Texas, where it seems to me you're scratchy, only fan the flames. Won't go back to Greenwood. Something in the air.
Welcome, good listeners, back to Speaking of Strange from the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina. Investigator Shelley Wright in the studio, Sam the Animal Steel producing, and Phyllis Galdi from Fate Magazine. Phyllis, what is your official title? Executive editor or?
Publisher. Emptier of waste baskets.
Right. Custodian. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Janitor. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is recently appointed editor-in-chief. Is that right?
Yes. It's good to have a brain on the staff. And she definitely has a wonderful brain and wonderful resource.
It's interesting. The ladies of the paranormal who are associated with Fate magazine. Of course, there's Phyllis, who's sitting across the table from me tonight, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, editor. And tomorrow night on KGRA, I'll be interviewing Marie Jones. Has Marie ever written for Fate magazine?
She sure has, yes.
Mm-hmm.
About time travel. Fascinating.
Excellent.
Absolutely fascinating.
I'll be talking to Marie tomorrow night about her book, her new book on archetypes and how to use, you know, these potent universal symbols to, what would you say, energize your psychology or your personal outlook. Yeah, I think that's a fun one. A lot of Jungian psychology.
And on a more mundane level, there's 23andMe, which traces your DNA, so you can find your ancestry that way. And it's really interesting because how fragmented we are to in its way to trace our lineage. It ties in with the archetypes, how related you are for you know, the races and the subculture. It's just absolutely fascinating. 23andMe.
I see that's synchronicity, folks, because I had never heard of that. And I'm a genealogy buff. And just a couple days ago, I was reading an article. Someone posted in a local Asheville group that they were born in 1949 and immediately adopted out. And from their earliest memory, they grew up in Greensboro, which is a couple miles. There's that relative. There's that relativity.
Time travel.
Couple hours down the road, and they had gone on 23andMe, and somehow the people they were working with said, "You're showing a lot of matches back in Yancey County, which is Burnsville."
Yep.
You were out in Burnsville looking around CeeLo.
Correct.
Mentioned
yes.
Those places
wonderful,
to me.
Wonderful.
That's the area my mother grew up. That's my roots in this area, even though I'm not native. Shelley was rubbing it in during the break that she's the only native.
I didn't mean to rub it in.
It sounded like you were.
I'm sorry.
You were rubbing it in. But anyway, I do have roots around here, and that's on my mother's side. Out there in Yancey County, but this person had gone on 23andMe, like you say, which I guess is a DNA testing, and like
you spit in a test tube for $100 and you send it in, and it's just incredible information you get back.
And you find how connected you are to certain people and close connection. I know people who have been doing some of these genealogy DNA projects for a few years, and it's amazing how specific that information is. But anyway, this person who was adopted was able to make connections to people back in the county where she was born and find out who her parents were. You know, so when adoptees are able to go back to the community where their biological kin were, they're able to ask questions through social media now. She went on a Facebook group and started asking questions of some of these people. Does anybody know these family names?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And does anybody know of a child that was given up for adoption?
Because sometimes the birth records are sealed, so
right,
you
and,
really can't.
And very often the parents who gave these children up never talked about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm adopted.
It's shameful.
And when I turned 18, like, I was in Florida, that's where I was born, and they were sealed until I was 18. And my parents told me, they were like, you know, we'll be happy to answer any questions if you ever have them or anything, but I never have asked.
Did you know all along? I mean, as soon as you were old enough to understand what adoption was, it was open.
Yeah,
they were
totally.
Open about it.
I was like 1 day old or something.
And they told you?
Not when I was 1 day.
Nobody wanted to keep you, huh?
Yeah, I guess. Mom says that she got to pick me. She's like, I had your sisters, but I picked you.
That's very cool.
Aww.
That's wonderful.
But yeah, I never looked into, I was like, okay, are either of my birth parents the heir to the Heinz ketchup fortune? No. Okay. I don't really. One of them's a tall alcoholic. We figured that much out. So I never asked because I was just like, I don't see what good it would do.
Right. Well, in this person's case, they discovered that they had like half siblings that they wanted to reunite with.
Like,
the parents are dead now.
Would be interesting, but you know, like to know like if there was anything that ran. I mean, but what does that even matter? Like, oh, by the way, you made it 41 years, and by the way, cancer is really bad, and you're like, you'll be dead by the time you're 42, or like.
But,
I wouldn't want to know that.
But with the DNA markers, you can find out what supplements or what you can do to counteract these genetic weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
what markers you have. Yeah,
it kind of reminds me of like twins separated at birth who will reunite when they're, you know, 40, 50 years old, and their paths in life have been so similar.
Paralleled.
The sort of interests they had, the things they studied, the jobs they've held, the men they married, you know, their children, they're these parallels. Fascinating. So, yeah, it's
and the psychic connection between twins, even when they don't know. I had neighbors in my where I lived, and there were like 5-year-old boys, twin boys, and one would get hurt and the other one would hurt too, and he would immediately come to his attention. It's like psychically he felt his twin's pain or anxiety, whatever it was. Yeah, one was like, you know, a few minutes older than the other one, and the older one would always protect his younger sibling.
They were like empaths. Huh?
Yeah, total empathic.
That's fascinating. And stories like that have been running in the pages of Fate magazine for what's pushing 70 years now.
Close to it.
Oh my goodness. It kind of started out, Fate magazine was like a, I shouldn't say subgenre, but it was a specific outlet for Ray Palmer had been publishing Amazing Stories, which was like a pulp magazine, a lot of the early science fiction. And you have an interest in science fiction.
Oh,
we
yes.
can talk about Clifford Sumac and some of these
Clifford Sumac. Yeah, I knew him. It was fascinating. Yes, that was the only game in town was the pulp magazines. They didn't have internet back then, and it wasn't the kind of media that we have now. So the magazines were the only way you could get information.
And I was speaking with Jean Marie Stein in recent months, and she is a sci-fi author and knew all of those people. I was dropping names, and Jean knew all of these folks.
She's amazing.
She's been active in sci-fi circles since the late 60s. She also has compiled the Strange series, which are collations or collections of some favorite stories, the Fate magazine's greatest hits, as it were.
That's right.
And there's a new issue of the Strange series out, the first volume of the Strange series in some years, right?
Correct, yes.
Did Jean Marie work on that one?
Of course,
as well?
She put it all together. She collected all the best stories, and it's like $14.99 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Very reasonable, with great
nice.
Stories.
But what I was getting at is in the early days, there was this this budding pulp sci-fi sort of literature, and there was some of this that blurred the line. There were people who began, like Richard Shaver, for instance, began to submit stories that kind of blurred the line between fact and fiction. Some people hinting that these experiences, which they had, were not pure invention. They were based on true experiences. So Fate Magazine became the flagship publication of these true reports of the strange and the unknown. Yep. And it remains so 70 years later. We are so excited to have Phyllis Galdi here in the studio with us talking about the relocation of Fate Magazine to Asheville or environs, you know, within a stone's throw here in the mountains. In any case, this is Joshua P. Warren speaking to Strange. We'll be right back.
Songs. I wake your mother. She's sleeping there, right by your side. In her right hand, a silver dagger. She said that you can be my bride. Your daddy is a handsome devil, got a chain 5 miles long on every link. A heart has dangled of another woman. He's loved and wronged. Silver dagger, I fight in vain. A cruel mother scorn and a long devil's chain.
Welcome back, good listeners and bad ones too. Speaking of Strange, Joshua P. Warren speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock, your host. Just having a fine time here in the studio tonight with Phyllis Galdi from Fate Magazine. I told you, Phyllis, when you came to town, we were going to have to do something to let the world know you own the airwaves tonight.
Yay.
And I want to give you every opportunity. Yay! I present these airwaves to you. You know, the mayor will give you the golden key to the city later, but as for now, all the best I can do is just give you the airwaves. But Fate Magazine is welcome here in Asheville. And like you say, I think the vortices, the energies here are welcoming Fate. Gradually, you're finding, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, that the real estate market here in Asheville it's like fighting wildfire because everybody wants to move to Asheville. Shelley, you see this a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And there's been an explosion of people moving into the south end of town.
Yeah.
Lots of building.
Speaking of the south end, how's everything over there at Nevermore?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's great. We had an event this week. It was great.
Right. Folks know that Shelley's the proprietress of Nevermore Mystical Arts, 1271 Sweeten Creek Road. That's just a couple miles off exit 51 from I-40, right next to Wright's Coin Shop.
Same building, different doors.
And you had an event this week.
Necromancy 101. Very popular.
Cool.
Yes. And then the next class in 2 weeks is sort of an extra necromancy class. Very nice. How to create a magical being. Well, you know, maybe the other necromancy classes after that. I've got a lot of things planned.
How to create a magical being, kind of like Tulpa?
Yeah, only these do stuff for you. When I created a Tulpa, it didn't actually do a whole lot for me. I gave him qualities. I actually made two Tulpas. Remember?
I remember the talk about Gulga over at Forrest when the lab was set up over at Forrest's house. I remember the experience, the experiments to create a tulpa.
Well, the one that we did for Warner Brothers, apparently that one, if they just stayed another couple of days, they would have seen everything that happened from that. I didn't get to see it, but Joshua and Forrest got to see it all.
What? Where you created it in that space over
in
there
that
at the
space,
lab, though,
in
right?
In the lab. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And within a few days, they were seeing...
They were seeing things. They were that things were cabinets opening, drawers opening, things being tossed around. Joshua was in the lab one night and saw something come down the steps, something really tall. Well, you know, Forrest is really tall. He assumed it was Forrest. And he turned around. No one was there. And then he found out Forrest was out of town.
Hmm. So you helped them to generate two tulpas.
Well, the first one was for Warner Brothers. And then later on, last year, Joshua was trying to do the Santa Claus tulpa. And
okay.
I took that a step further and went into the sexy Santa Claus tulpa. If I'm going to create one, I might as well have fun, right? Yeah. I wrote two columns about that. It was fun. It was a lot of
fun. Sexy Santa Claus.
Did you have trouble getting rid of it?
No, you really have to feed that thought form. I have a feeling that more towards Christmas time, because it was more of a Santa Claus type tulpa. You know, you've got the kids that are so excited. That's when things are going to really start ramping up again, I'm pretty sure.
I always thought the tulpas were kind of negative and creepy and scary.
Oh, I made mine to be very positive and like cats and redheads.
Hmm. It's kind of like the, in folklore, there's the golem, mm-hmm. which was kind of created by the rabbis or the priests as a protector. Wasn't the golem of Prague? Was that right? So, I mean, there are instances of thought forms or tulpas that are created as like protector figures in the folklore. But I'm with you. It's kind of like the movie that they were working on at the time, Phyllis. Josh got a producer credit on that one, I think, The Apparition. Mm-hmm. You know, how pitiful is this? I've never even seen The Apparition, and even though the Blu-ray release has like a extra, you know, some mm-hmm. of these Blu-ray disc releases have extra features or whatever, there's a documentary as an added feature, a bonus feature on the Blu-ray. Have you seen that, Shelley?
No, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't. I didn't know what...
This is going on a few years ago now, but yeah. Joshua P. Warren's Lemur team helped put together and consult with the makers of this film, because Hollywood occasionally wants to mimic what's actually going on in the field. And Joshua P. Warren, he'll throw whatever up against the wall and see if it sticks sometimes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So when they contacted him and said, can you help us do that? Oh, of course. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
yeah,
sure. I know nothing about it, but I'll be glad to do it for you. But no, Josh, of course, he does know a little something about tulpas. Tulpas have been one of our most popular recurring subjects on this show for years. I remember the first time I ever came in the studio with Josh and Micah Hanks was producing at the time. Josh and Micah were talking about tulpas the first time I ever met them, and I was able to provide some examples from some obscure reading that I had been doing that lined up with some other examples that Micah had run across. I think Micah gave us his example that the author, creator of the comic strip character, The Shadow, and who also wrote many, many novels based on this character, The Shadow, What Evil Lurks in the Hearts of Men, The Shadow Knows. This author, maybe it was not even during his lifetime, maybe it was in the house where he wrote many of those stories after his death, but people would see this shadow figure, which is, you know, a literary figure. And I found other examples of this where people who were fiction writers had developed these characters that kind of took on a life of their own. And I've read time and again of people who write fiction novels that have a recurring character, or detective novels. Sometimes they'll churn out hundreds of books from the case files of so-and-so detective. You know, Agatha Christie and people like this have written hundreds of novels using the same detectives. That this character takes on a life of its own, and it's so that when they sit down and start writing dialogue, it's almost like they're taking dictation. The character exists in their head so distinctly that they're just taking down words.
Channeling.
Yeah, exactly. Channeling these fictional creations. And how realistic are some of these characters? Very. In some cases, very. Maybe there are examples of characters like James Bond that are just so over the top, so ridiculous. And that's what I was thinking. I watched Spectre with Hulda the other night. That's my movie suggestion for the week. I mean, I know it's
Spectre.
Yeah, it's the latest installment in the James Bond series. Daniel Craig, Spectre. I kind of liked it. It was epic. It was 2.5 hours of James Bond, and it was pretty good stuff. But, yeah, anyway, James Bond, Ian Fleming, crazy stuff, right? Sherlock Holmes is all the rage now. But
never got into the 007 that much.
Do you like spy thrillers or detectives?
I like spy implementations. I like, old spy cameras and, like the technology of spying and espionage.
Well, movies, novels, TV series, anything like that. Is there a spy that personifies all that you appreciate? Austin Powers, Inspector Gadget, I started to say. Austin Powers, yeah. You have a favorite spy, Shelley?
You know, I'm really not much of a spy.
The black one or white one?
I'm really not a spy person. I'm more of a detective person.
Okay.
So, Sherlock Holmes.
You like a Sherlock Holmes.
The older ones, Jeremy Brett, and then even the American Sherlock Holmes version called Elementary with, what's his name, Johnny Lee Miller. Have you seen that one?
No.
I like it. It's really good.
Shelley has some obscure recommendations now and then. Phyllis, what about you? Spies, detectives, any favorite characters pop into mind?
Again, Sherlock Holmes. I like the intellectual challenge of it rather than all the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
I got one. Encyclopedia Brown.
I liked Encyclopedia Brown.
Who remembers Encyclopedia Brown? Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go even further. The Great Brain.
Are you using Google over there? Okay,
no.
you're just pulling these out of the ether or out of your memory.
Remember The Great Brain?
No.
You never read that series?
No.
That was a good one. He was like from Utah. It's like a little Mormon kid. He was like a little detective guy.
I've got some paperbacks at home of The Saint. Okay. The Saint was good stuff.
Spy versus Spy as well.
Oh, yeah. Mad Magazine.
Mad Magazine, yep.
Yeah, that's the good stuff. I don't know why we're talking about spies. Oh, yes.
Tulpas. How to create a magical being.
From tulpas to spies. We'll hear it all here on Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back after this break. Yes. You are tuned in to Speaking of Strange, the final minutes of Hour One. And again, we are graced by the presence of Phyllis Galdi in the studio. Phyllis, it's going to be fun getting you moved in down here. You're looking for a place where your dogs can run. You're a dog lady, and you will be in good company here in Asheville, although you like cats, too.
Yes, I like them both. And chickens, too, and maybe a horse. I want to get out in the country so I can be a wild, crazy farm person.
All right. I think you'll find a lot of kindred spirits around here. I'm a cat person, strictly a cat person. I grew up around dogs, but I've never been in a place where I could let them run. I think that's important if you're going to have dog. I mean, people would take issue with me because there are people who are living in a you know, little 300 square foot apartment with a husky, and I don't see that. That dog is just doing laps around the apartment all day, or what? Those dogs are born to run, and I don't see it. But God bless you if you're living in a 300 square foot apartment with a husky. And but yeah, you were showing us pictures. You've got a you got a setter. Right, you got an Irish
golden
setter there,
retriever.
Or you got a golden retriever,
and a husky, maybe greyhound mix, a rescue dog. She runs like a maniac. She just flies. I think she's part deer. She's part beagle. She's probably part cat. She's like a Heinz 57. She's amazing dog, and the golden is just beautiful. He should be a therapy dog. He's a healing dog.
There's another magazine in which you have interest that people don't hear about as much as Fate, because it's more of a specialized interest, but it is a very popular subject, especially with all the animal lovers out there. Species Link. Tell us a little bit about Species Link.
Species Link Journal is about animal communication. It's articles by experts, by ordinary people who have communications with all kinds of forms of life. It can be rocks, it can be trees, it can be plants, it can be dogs, cats, alligators, all kinds of things. It's fascinating. Again, if you send us an email, we'll send you a free e-issue of Species Link Journal.
If people get in touch through the fatemag.com.
Sure, just ask for a Species Link Journal, a free e-issue.
Species Link is fascinating stuff. And the sort of folks you have writing for Species Link, any names that some people would recognize? Or is it kind of a...
Well, it's if you're in the animal communication, a lot of... I call them pet psychics, but they prefer to be called animal communicators. So there's a lot of the top-of-the-line animal communicators that have written for Species Link over the years. They're absolutely stellar, the information that they – how much we should appreciate our animals, how smart they are, how intuitive, and how they understand everything we're doing.
I think so. There's a lot more to sometimes the animal sitting in the corner staring at the wall and turning their head and making
like,
funny
noises. What the
heck
is my owner doing now? Why is she going out there? Why isn't she taking me along? I mean, they're sophisticated, what they have to say. It's incredible.
That's right. So, yeah, you may have a ghost whisperer on one hand and a actual horse whisperer on the other hand. All this intercommunication is not strictly limited to ETs and spirits, but other forms of life. And I think it's fascinating to explore all these avenues. What do you think about future issue? Oh, yeah. Let me see that issue of Fate there, Shelley, because you actually published like some mock-up covers about coming editions. Future editions, if people subscribe to Fate magazine, they can we'll get back on a regular, bi-monthly?
Yes, as soon as they get relocated down here again.
You've got a cover story about Josephine Baker. Many people are familiar with Josephine Baker. She's a phenomenal celebrity of the past century. very influential figure, but she had interests in the paranormal.
Very much so, yes. She was a wild, crazy lady, and back in the day in the 20s, she could only perform in the cotton clubs. She wasn't allowed to perform in the the regular nightclubs. She was an amazing singer and dancer, and so she said to heck with it, so she went to Paris, and of course the people there totally embraced her, and she did this outrageous dances and costumes and just incredible performances that she's famous for. Anyway, I went to Chez Josephine in New York City, the bistro that two of her sons operate in honor of her. And I walked in there and I saw her dancing, her spirit dancing down the aisle. And I thought, oh my God, this was so cool. And the owner even let me put on one of her headdresses. So I got to be Josephine there for like 30 seconds. It was incredible, the energy. I don't know how she wore those huge, monstrous headdresses because they were so heavy. And she was very, very muscular, and she would often answer the door in France. Somebody came to fix their electricity or do some work. She would be buck naked. I mean, she had no inhibitions about her body. She
was a cover story on Josephine Baker in an upcoming issue of Fate magazine. So subscribe, fatemag.com. We'll be right back.